Bredocast. Wir erforschen was mit Medien.
Hello and welcome. You are listening to the Bredocast, a podcast about media research straight out of the Leibniz Institute for Media Research in Hamburg. My name is Johanna Seebauer, and I'm here today with my guest, Magdalena Guralska, who is currently a guest researcher at our institute. Hello, Magdalena.
Hello, hello, hello.
Thanks for being here. The two of us, we're going to talk today about medical controversies and how online communication can enhance it.
Yes.
Before we dive into it, maybe you can give us a little bit more information about yourself, about your academic background.
Sure, right. I am a PhD student at a late stage, so hopefully a doctor soon. I'm based originally at the University of Warsaw, and I am a guest researcher, student researcher, visiting student fellow at the institute here. I came here to develop methodology that will allow me to study online discourses more efficiently, especially when it comes to information exchange between languages. As we know, internet isn't really bound by geographic boundaries, it's bound by the language boundaries. So, for instance, someone who is fluent in English will be able to translate, share knowledge they found online in the English-speaking web. In the web he also uses or she also uses that isn't in English, for instance, it's in Polish. So I came here to study this, exactly how I can better understand those dynamics. I have a background in qualitative studies primarily. I have also, however, graduated from the Oxford Internet Institute at the University of Oxford, where I have studied other methodologies of social research, also inclusive of quantitative ones, which wasn't easy, I can tell you, but I have made it alive, and now I'm here.
Yay, still alive. Oh, and we're very happy about that.
Most of my research throughout the years was focused on a qualitative study of how people use the internet pretty much to collaborate around information exchange. So till now, I was focusing mostly on pretty much the dynamics of internet usage and not really on what people actually talk about, like what actually the topic of their conversations. So for my PhD project, I decided to dive into that and research exactly also the topic of their conversations in relation to dynamics as well.
So you are looking now at medical controversies or the discourse surrounding medical topics, and you choose quite a specific disease to illustrate the discourse surrounding medical issues. You choose Lyme disease, which is, I'm going to say the German word, Borreliose is the German word we use. So it's a disease that is transferred. Mm-hmm. Is that the correct term? Transferred to humans by ticks?
Well, it's
transmitted, I think,
Well,
is the
word. Can say that in a way. I mean, we also use the Polish word for the Lyme disease is borreliosa. I mean, it's pretty much the same. And also in English, they use the word borreliosis too. So that's a very international term, borreliosis, in the end. Well, the disease is caused by the bacteria that the ticks carry. So, and then the bacteria attacks various systems in the body. And the problem is, well, there are many problems with the disease, but before we get to it, I chose the topic because it's controversial. Mm-hmm. And I found that, first of all, it would be great to do research that may have some social impact, that can bring in knowledge to the healthcare system, that can improve, for instance, prophylactic policies in Poland, at least in terms of informing people about the Lyme disease, or giving knowledge to doctors about what people can, what information they can find online about the Lyme disease, that they can bring with them to the doctor's office and have some sort of presuppositions, some impressions of the disease that may influence their decisions, the health decisions, the health choices, which is, I think, very important for modern medicine to consider that patients have more say or want to have more say, and then may use ways of curing their health problems that may not necessarily be positively looked upon by what we call in social sciences biomedicine, which means in general Western medicine, in contrary to other systems of health and body-related knowledge, for instance, traditional Chinese medicine or Ayurveda, etc., etc., even like traditional herbal European knowledge also falls into this category.
And what specifically is so controversial about Lyme disease?
So Lyme disease there is a number of problems, starting from the beginning, which is a tick, and ending at long-term side effects of having the disease. So at the level of the tick, it's pretty much that it's really hard to, first of all, avoid tick bites, in a sense that, for instance, mosquitoes can be hurt, and then we can prevent it more easily to not get bitten, for instance. You can also hang, we call it mosquiteras in Polish, in English it's called mosquito nets, so you will be protected at night when you sleep, and then you will not get bitten and have dengue or malaria. With ticks it's different, for a very reason, because they are sneaky, and it may be very hard to detect them touching your skin, walking on your clothes, and then eventually biting you. Then also ticks have 4 stages of development, and when they are very tiny, they can also bite, also carrying the bacteria. And very hard to see, especially. This is especially a problem for dog owners or cat owners or children, parents, because it's hard to notice that this little creature that can hide somewhere on the body and infect its victim with bacteria. And that's the first thing. Then the bacteria itself. The bacteria that is most dangerous and most invasive, it's called Borrelia burgdorferi. I'm sorry, my Latin is horrible, but this is why the name of borreliosis comes from. It's from where the name comes from the name of the bacteria, which is Borrelia. And this is all that you have to know. So the Borrelia is problematic because it is sometimes really hard to detect. There is a limited number of tests available on the market that detect Borrelia, and while there are many more forms of the bacteria that are not detected by those tests. So you may have the bacteria, but it's not detected by the test you have because the test doesn't work for this particular type of bacteria. And then the problem is that you may carry this bacteria in your system, have some symptoms that don't have explanation. Henceforth, it's hard to choose a right solution to your health problems, or right treatment, right cure. And the result of it may be even more straining for your body, may worsen your health condition, hence the controversies around that.
And the symptoms of the disease, as far as I understood it, are also quite unspecific, aren't they?
Yeah, and that this is actually like a proper term for this type of diseases. Diseases with non-specific symptoms. Basically, it means that the list of symptoms is very, very, very long and confusing. For instance, Lyme disease symptoms, borreliosis symptoms can be are very similar to flu sometimes. or sometimes are similar to different inflammations, chronic fatigue, and the list goes on and on. And then there are even more serious effects of being of having the disease that in regard of nervous system or the cardiovascular system. And then interestingly, well, I mean, it's interesting to me. It's a little bit terrifying actually. Many symptoms of Lyme disease are similar to COVID. And many symptoms of what we call chronic Lyme disease, and it isn't really recognized as a separate medical condition, but it functions as such in the community of people infected with Lyme, with the Borrelia bacteria. And it's actually is pretty similar to long COVID as well. And however, long COVID is studied and recognized and studied, even though the two diseases have a lot in common. Chronic Lyme isn't that studied for a very reason that it's really hard to study a disease where you are not sure whether the symptoms you see were caused by this particular source, but the particular this one factor. In case of Lyme disease, it's the bacteria. In case of COVID, it's the virus. It has been a long time since you got those long COVID symptoms, and you didn't have a test that shows this happened because of COVID.
Yeah,
we assume it, and the same goes for chronic Lyme. Yeah.
Yeah, let's move on to the controversy surrounding it, because maybe we should add that both of us we're not doctors, so this is not a medical podcast, but you are focusing on the controversy and the discourse surrounding Lyme disease.
Yes.
What could you notice? What is so specific about the discourse surrounding Lyme disease?
The problem with controversies around Lyme and the discourse around it, or pretty much the way Lyme is being talked about online, is it kind of circles around those aspects of the disease I have mentioned before, which is getting bitten by the tick. So there is controversies around the chances of getting bitten by a tick that carries Borrelia, because not all ticks are infected, but which ticks are infected, in which areas of the country should we go? Like, should we allow our children to go to play in the meadows, in the bushes, in the forest? Should we go with an umbrella to a forest? And I actually know people who go on a not rainy day with umbrellas to the forest because they are afraid ticks will fall on them from trees, which is in theory possible, but it's very, very not. I mean, the probability is very low, because ticks like grass. They just wait. I mean, they don't really jump. They just wait on leaves or on grass and like stick their little arms, hoping someone will pass by and they will just grab them and be carried further away. So that's the controversy, like the prevention. And there is also controversy around how to prevent it. And there is a lot of market biomedical offers, beginning with the generic sprays we have for like mosquitoes and whatever ticks as well, ending with herbal solutions that are not recommended by biomedicine, that you can cook and drink and is supposed to prevent you from getting infected with the bacteria. Even if you get bitten, the bacteria will like not affect you, and it hasn't been proven by biomedicine that it works. So that's area of prevention. And then we have the area of actually being bitten, having been bitten, and what happens when you get the bite, like what you should do, how to take out the tick, and then if you have you have to wait. If you have, the big round red circle, this is definitely, you have to go to a doctor and you have to take antibiotics. But, not all infectious bites have the round circle. So, you don't know, you never know. I mean, it's uncertainty grows. There's a lot of uncertainty that creates the controversy around the disease. And then, of course, the matter of cure, like how many antibiotics you should have, like what kind of antibiotics, like not all antibiotics work on all types of the Borrelia bacteria. More controversy. And then eventually, The symptoms themselves, like not all cases of infection show right away. You may have, in Polish they call it like sleeping Borrelia, that it kind of is there, the bacteria is there, but it's not very invasive, and then one day, poof, something happens. You don't know what happens. You suddenly you feel horrible, you feel very sick, you feel a lot of fatigue, you may have nerve pains, things are happening, and you don't know what's happening. And this is where the problem starts, because it's like no one really knows. This is because like you who are bitten by the tick, it may be for a different reason. So you walk around in circles trying to find solutions to your health problem, and there is more controversies around it, because like maybe someone will come up with an idea to give you a Lyme disease test, maybe someone will not. Mm-hmm. So another reason for controversies, and then also. And then also more generic controversies that don't come from like experiences of patients, because all those narratives that I have presented, all those topics I have spoken about, really come from what people on the internet talk to themselves or ask questions about it, or those topics are most commonly referred to across Polish media scape, pretty much around late spring, early summer, or even early spring, given the climate change.
You're observing the Polish digital sphere in your research. Yes. And so your claim is that online communication is enhancing controversy.
Well, yeah, but it isn't a very controversial claim. It's the question is rather how it is influencing the controversy, because I think it's pretty clear it influences controversy in the sense that several studies have shown how online communication, especially social media, enhance even algorithms simply push to the surface of the what we would call networked public spaces, right? I mean areas of social media where we have this impression of like a public forum. So the most reacted to content is often controversial or negative, or kind of carries out sparks emotions in the audience, right? So for this very reason, controversial topics will raise to the surface, will be more spoken about, are more viral, using medical references. The question is what are the deeper consequences of that? And in many ways, to what I have found so far, is the results online communication has on making, like, well, pretty much solving fear. I don't really like this term fear, but in many ways it's results in increasing of anxiety. When with internet we had this premise that the internet will bring knowledge to the people, right? It's true. For the first time in history, that many people have that much access to knowledge. It's unprecedented. And along many good results of this availability, there is a bunch of negative results, that side effects that some of us in social science have thought about previously. For instance, Anthony Giddens, really back in the 1990s, spoke about reflexive modernization, which means reflexive modernity, which means pretty much that we as media audiences will become more reflective, which is great. However, we will asking questions, we'll question, we will seek answers, and we'll be more prone, so to say, to question authority, which isn't bad, but then it can be problematic when it comes to health, because we assume, and that's a viewpoint of medical anthropology, that health is the knowledge, our knowledge about health is universal, and then there is truth in that knowledge, and then there are like right choices and bad choices, but then in the same time we know that knowledge about human body is constantly changing, and the science of it, it's developing very quickly, and some ideas that were right 30, 20, or even 5 years ago are no more accurate. And so now also patients know that knowledge about health isn't, well, like this sort of fixed entity. It's always changing, and this doesn't help. Like it is another source of controversy. It's another source of anxiety, fear, uncertainty that will affect people's choices about health. And it was very clear around the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic. It was super clear how people were afraid, very much afraid, and many more people that we could ever thought were skeptical towards the knowledge about the pandemic that was spread, was popularized, was informed, was shared by public authorities. Like how, like why they didn't trust doctors, and the reason for that is, among others, that the access to information online, which isn't, as I said, anything that should be prevented per se. However, it's a huge moral ethical dilemma, and that social media companies have solved when it comes to the pandemic with tagging particular sources, not deleting them but tagging them, right? So here you have information about COVID from the Ministry of Health underneath a video on YouTube that's about whatever, I mean, actually, I think all COVID-related content was marked like that, just, you know, without differentiating between like official and non-official sources. All of it was tagged with this link to an official source, and I think it was a great choice because censoring isn't the answer when we want to change people's minds. It's doesn't really help when it comes to making someone trust more a doctor. It actually makes people more upset oftentimes. And in my research as ethnographic, when I talk to people about knowledge online and what they do, how they use the internet to help themselves, and it's a good moment to say to whom actually I talk. So among those people, there are those who are afraid of Lyme disease and tick bites and are very, very cautious of that. And there are people who are infected with Lyme disease. And there are people who have either professional or hobby reasons to be close to nature and be exposed to tick bites.
Can you talk a little bit about your methods? How did you research the discourse around Lyme disease?
What I knew when I was starting the study, I knew that there were controversies, and I knew that the internet is giving people agency to seek information on their own, right? And I was wondering, like, what's happening there? Like, what's the dynamic? So I thought that I will need two methods to study the phenomenon. First, ethnography, to be able to talk to people and understand their take on the disease, their experience of the controversy, of this uncertainty, of those media narratives, of the entire media scape they are exposed to. Like, what is this media scape? Like, because it's different for everybody. I mean, my mother will have a very different take on how the internet looks like than I have. I mean, of course, but you know what I mean. It's different. It's very different. So a qualitative method to be able to have a deeper look on the problem. And then quantitative methods.
And how did you find the people that you talked to?
Online, pretty much. And some of my interviewees would refer me to other interview friends of them.
But they were part of some... They were Lyme disease groups, yes. Or how did you?
Yes, Lyme disease. They were followers of Lyme disease information accounts on various social media, from Instagram through YouTube to Facebook. Members of Facebook groups, and usually in those cases, very like polarizes dedicated Facebook groups. that were not, they didn't have any particular profile when it comes to preferred choices of cures. There were people both like following the biomedical solutions, recommendations, as well as the alternative ones. And I mean, all of those people were using what the internet gives them, which means access to knowledge. And I think, and it's one of my findings, that there is certain distrust that the internet enhances in people for a very reason that when we don't use the resources that internet gives us to find information, like, we are giving away a little bit of our agencies. Like if something happens, if you will go to a doctor's office and they will tell you something and you will not understand, you can only blame yourself that you haven't prepared yourself. Or if the doctor will not know what to do, and like, who else you are going to turn to? Like, this is your responsibility, because it is your responsibility. But should it be like, should this be the responsibility of the healthcare system to take care of the patients? Because we don't have the competence to understand the scale of the disease, and we shouldn't have, because we don't have to have. Yeah.
But back to the methods.
Yes.
We were talking about the methods. So you did interviews?
Yes. I did interviews. Mm-hmm. I spoke to people on repeatedly over the last 2 years. Did field work in the countryside in Poland.
So you did talk to the same people multiple times?
Yeah, it depends. It depends if there was something to talk about. If it wasn't, I wouldn't. So it really was case-based, really very tailored to the interviewee's needs and their involvement with the topic. So, for instance, if in the northeast Poland, I have spoke to forest workers, people who are responsible for administrating national forests and who are exposed daily to ticks, and they are required by their employee to have medical yearly checkups on Lyme, and their relationship with Lyme and ticks is very different than the relationship a person who, for instance, likes to pick mushrooms every once in a while has with the forest and the ticks, because mushroom pickers do go inside bushes and they are exposed to ticks that way. Or, for instance, dog owners have a very different exposure. So I mean, in their lives, if there isn't something happening with, like, I don't know, they get bitten by a tick and there is they are afraid. And if this doesn't happen, and if they are just... if their experience is just at the level of preventing, I don't have another reason to talk to them.
And apart from the interviews, you also did text analysis, am I right?
Yes, yeah. Media discourse analysis, classical media discourse analysis, pretty much. Within the work in progress.
Within Facebook groups, or did you
media, use social media,
news articles, and
that's complicated, because we have different spaces online and not all of them are accessible the same way. So with normal media, it's just pretty straightforward. It's publicly available textual analysis of how media writes about Lyme disease. And when it comes to social media, it's a little different. It is I would go and do participant observation in public Facebook groups or open Facebook groups, being like given a green light from the group's administrators. When it comes to Instagram and YouTube, it's a little different, because those media are social media are they are available publicly without needing to log in. So that's a little of a different rule. When it comes to ethical online research, it's Googleable, and this way I was able to gather some narratives about the disease. But I wasn't really focusing on social media discourses per se, because they are very scattered. And so I would focus on some examples of popular sources of information. Also, ones that were I was informed about by my interviewees, so I was able to see what they like. I mean, to see what they see, and I mean, of and like the most interesting in a sense to me were sources that are online but not are not media per se and are not social media per se, which means various health related platforms that are not run by the government and that are rather private entities, and then blogs. So various sources of information that pose as professional sources of information and are easily findable online. So like what is their story? What's their narrative online? And it's really important for me to be able to gather all those different sources to map the just basically the landscape of the narrative. So I can see what possible information about Lyme people can find online.
And what are your preliminary results? Are there any that you can talk about with us?
Well, definitely that the biggest takeaway, in a sense, is that there is, on the level of online communication, this what I mentioned, and I call it digital distress, it's a phenomenon that cannot be ignored, in a sense that to a various extent online sources, online resources on health and social media filled in for the shortcomings of the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm.
And it's true for, well, the entire world, including Poland and Germany. And in Poland, where I can see it in my fieldwork, it has definitely been the case that Facebook groups in particular became sources of support, semi-professional advising by patients to patients, sharing information on what to do when it comes to, in particular, controversial diseases. And Lyme is such, especially as it is oftentimes being belittled or ignored or being shushed away as an idea by doctors, especially doctors from older generation that are not really happy to see people using internet to get knowledge.
So you're saying that those are gaps in the healthcare system that are filled by the patients themselves with those Facebook groups and creating?
Yes. Well, gaps that were there and may have been unnoticed, or gaps that just are a new phenomenon due to the changes in the way we communicate. It's really hard to expect nothing will change when the internet came around. And things have changed. And one of those things that have changed is the way we trust doctors today. We, as patients, require being taken more seriously. And even if it is just for the sake of building the trust again between a patient and doctor, it's worth it. Because
are you now talking about Poland or a specific area or in general?
In general. It's true for other studies have shown changes in the dynamic. The even during the pandemic, simply journalists were writing about phenomena like that, this disruption of what we thought was some sort of traditional power relation between the doctors, well, the health professionals, generally speaking, and patients. And I have been observing the same dynamic in the English-speaking internet, which is really hard to grasp in terms of user positionality, because, well, lingua franca, English, all over the world, people who use it online can be all over the place. However, when I was doing some research a couple of years ago in the US, it's also pretty clear, and it is visible. Even if like any of us would just go online and go looking for health influencers that are based in the US, and we can check that they are. There was a lot of narratives around patient agency, which is great, and I don't think it's wrong, but it has to be recognized and has to be taken seriously, in a sense that we need to prevent this digital distress from happening. We need to make, knowing that patients require being taken more seriously, that they won't have they want doctors to have a more holistic approach to their health problems. This has to be recognized. And it is, things are happening, things are changing, but usually it takes a lot of time for big systems to change in that regard, especially when we come, when we talk about the way doctors in particular are taught ways of patient communication. Usually there is so much for a doctor to learn, the classes on patient communications. So,
but that is something that would need to change, you say?
Definitely, because if we want to keep preventing negative consequences of people looking for not biomedically approved solutions, some of the solutions are fine. I mean, there is nothing wrong with herbal medicines. There is nothing wrong with a lot of solutions provided by, I don't know, Ayurveda or traditional Chinese medicine, especially those two, as those are also very developed health knowledge systems. Still, but there are many ways that can be dangerous to people, and if you want to prevent it, and we want to make sure patients have good relationship and they trust doctors, and this trust, well, Lyme disease is just an example, right? And it's a pretty vivid example because, well, vivid examples serve us well to see some problems more clearly, right? But we have this distrust spreads to many other issues, and for instance, can have way more severe consequences when it comes to, well, I mean, even COVID was the perfect example. Like, there was so much misinformation, not even disinformation, right? Because disinformation, I understand, is disinformation and something that happens, well, it's done on purpose. When it comes to COVID, there was a lot of misinformation, like this effect of just information being passed from a person to person, and then on the way being like changing, being like, there's some deformation of the information happening, and then misinformation spreads, false information, fake news happen, and then we have, I don't know, people curing their COVID with silver intakes, right? So can be dangerous in most unexpected situations. So we need to really invest in rebuilding the trust of patients into doctors through changing the very fundament of our contact with medical care, which is general practitioner's office is the primary care. It's really important to have at this stage to have more holistic approach to patients and take have the knowledge of how the modern, well, that we live in digital age, the digital age, how the digital age changes their reality. So the doctors should have information about their patients' information landscape. I don't want to expect too much from that, but I think social scientists could provide them with information on that, right? Like,
which is what you are doing. Yes, at the moment.
Exactly. In case of Lyme, it would be great to have it, to see it more as a systematic policy recommendation, even for the entire European Union. But I'm dreaming big now. But I mean, but I don't know. Does it make sense what I'm saying? I think, I mean, this is like, I feel very strongly about it, but I understand not everybody can see it that way.
Mm. What will be your next step in your research?
I will be inquiring into and seeing to what extent diasporas can influence the internet of their native tongue, in a sense. So it's like a little side study, but I think it's quite important actually, because it's true also for people who use internets in different languages, as I mentioned in the beginning. In this particular case, I will be trying to understand to what extent American Polish diaspora translates knowledge about Lyme and solutions to the disease from their information landscape, from the context they function to Polish, because there is a lot of Lyme in the US, especially in the area from where the name of Lyme comes from, which is a city in Connecticut. And it happens so that areas where there is a lot of ticks and Lyme are also heavily populated by Polish because of climate, probably climate similarities, let's say. So I'm curious to see to what extent this situation like influences the way we speak about Lyme in across the Polish web. And it's really important to have to understand that people who are like bilingual or speak several languages, their role online is really important, because they will take one information. For instance, if I speak German, I read something online on German web, and then translate it to Polish, and then this information poof suddenly spreads in Poland. And this may seem like, well, it's just, well, nothing really important. No, it's actually really important, because if we wonder how COVID controversies spread, this is exactly the way they did spread.
Okay, Magdalena, thank you very much for talking to me about research on controversies surrounding Lyme disease.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for listening. We say goodbye.
Bredocast. Wir erforschen was mit Medien.